The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I wasn't saying that in like a pejorative
squad.
Bad way.
This is the terror squad of 2015.
This is a team.
Yeah.
Squad
it's
goals.
Yeah. Andrew Bifeccio.
Andrew, I missed you. I haven't podcasted with you in a very long time.
Yeah, we did that one NBC. I was in the office for like a day.
Yeah. About Earthbound.
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
No. Didn't we do one with me, you, and Jose and Pear like a month ago?
I don't know.
And then we did, I was in the comedy. You were giving me the finger while you were drinking.
Okay.
You were like, I haven't podcasted with you in so long.
People listen to the show. They can't see.
It's a visual medium.
It's good to have you back.
So wait, we can't curse anymore. Do we go to obscene gestures? Is that the idea?
Yeah, probably. Well, I have to be leading this thing, so I'm not going to be writing down the curses. So there's probably going to be a lot of curses in this episode.
Yeah.
Visual curses.
Of course,
this is the internet's number one PlayStation podcast. And as so, we're going to talk about a whole lot of things PlayStation. We're going to talk about the little kerfluffle that caused over the Vita. Whether the Vita is a legacy hardware or not.
Yeah, the whole talking about all things PlayStation might have gotten a little smaller.
Might have gotten a little smaller.
Here and forever.
We're going to talk about XCOM 2, which everyone's stoked for. Not coming to PlayStation.
That's right.
How the hell is that happening? We'll get into that. We're going to talk about what the hell the Sony first parties are up to. We'll talk about what dormant franchises we want to return. We're going to, of course, talk about E3. That's what we do.
Yay.
Right.
Oh, my God. It's so soon. It's 2 weeks from today. It's press conference.
It's hard to believe it's that soon.
Hard to believe.
But yeah, the Vita had a weird little week last week.
So they backtracked.
Yes, they did.
So like the basic news is that during presentation, Andy House referred to the Vita as
You call him Andy House?
Should I not?
I mean, he's Andrew House, but I didn't realize you guys were on like colloquialisms.
I'm sure you can call him Andrew House. Is it weird now?
No.
Did I just out our relationship?
Drew House? Andy
okay,
House?
I'm sorry.
It sounds like you made that Andrew House home.
Oh, that was in my head. It wasn't at my lips.
A PlayStation home. We have a ice cream store called Andy and Andy's Ice Cream. No, so during presentation, during like an investor presentation, he referred to the Vita as a legacy platform.
Yep.
They backtracked later and said he was referring to the phased out like fat Vita, the OLED Vita, and that he wasn't referring to the Vita Slim.
Do you buy that?
Maybe it's just a matter of what audience he's speaking to. When he's talking to us, maybe he doesn't want us to hear that. When he's talking to people who are investing money, it's possible to speak two truths at once.
I think that's a good point. And I think that's something people forget at this time of year and in earnings calls and at E3 is that, E3 is primarily a show that's not for you and me, right? We're for the press, so I guess it is. But it's not for like the public. It's more for like, buyers and like retailers and, investors and things like that. So that said, I do think that he may have meant it to some degree. You're smiling at me. Why are you smiling?
I'm just thinking about Obi-Wan Kenobi saying, "So what I told you was true from a certain point of view."
Ooh.
You're like a swamp ghost.
I don't think they're going to stop active development in every Vita project or anything. I don't think they're literally considering a legacy the way PSP is or like PS2.
Yeah.
But I do think that we're going to see less or fewer, first party games made for it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's what when a lot of people wrote in asking, what do we think Vita's presence at E3 is going to be? And I said, I think it's going to be tied to whatever indies are on Sony stages. And I think whatever indies are on there are going to be PS3, PS4, and Vita. Predominantly, they're going to be cross-buy, cross-save. That's going to be awesome. That's what I love. But if you're expecting Infamous, if you're expecting God of War, if you're expecting that Bioshock game, you shouldn't expect that because that's foolish of you because that game is not coming out. actually a video game.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the number I see batted around is around 10 million, usually for the install base on this thing. That's, that's slightly more than the Sega Saturn, of all things. There's not a huge group. But there's another side of this coin, and that's that the people who buy Vitas buy video games. Mm-hmm. They buy lots.
Yep. Yeah, and the attach rate is insane.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the difference. But well, not difference. I mean, the Saturn was the same way. That was the hardcore gamers, the import gamers console at that period of time. And I think the parallels are somewhat appropriate there.
It seems like nowadays you can be a system like that and not fail in the same way. Like we saw so many handhelds and consoles burn out in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Yep. Whereas a system selling, you know, even half that many units now might actually stick around a little longer. Mm-hmm. Like the Wii U is not doing terrific, but it's getting games still, you know? Mm-hmm. The Vita's not dead in the water, and Vita's, it's been kind of on life support for a few years, but...
And unlike Wii U, like, Vita is part of this larger ecosystem. Yes. Like, it does have very, like, tangible ties to PS4, and yep. it is, yep. like, a... Like, remote play is awesome. Mm-hmm. I would say remote play is, like, legitimately one of the coolest features of PS4. Can't do it without a Vita. Mm-hmm. And I think there's value in that. And I think, like, stuff like MLB, like, the show, like, it does make sense to have it on Vita. I do like the cross-save stuff. I think they'll keep doing that. Like, I think things like that I can see on Vita for the foreseeable future. I just think that, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I don't know that I'm going to say we never see a one last-ditch effort for, like, a God of War or a Infamous or something. Yeah. But or maybe we start seeing some more ports, PS3 ports down or something.
I mean,
but
that would be interesting if, you know, the Uncharted trilogy, the Uncharted collection that we all assume is going to be revealed at E3, if something like that also on Vita, it would be.
Do you think Uncharted 3 could run on Vita?
No.
I mean, Golden Abyss is. Looks great.
I mean, so that's the thing.
But,
it's like
but it was built for
on,
the ground up.
Yeah, very early on in the Vita's lifespan, we got Golden Abyss at launch, and then we got, I think, what the next year was Liberation, AC Liberation, like these gorgeous games that did.
They were original.
Killzone.
Original. The Killzone game is gorgeous.
Yep. And that's technically the same engine as the PS3 game.
But again, if you don't think you're going to sell enough of them, yes, Vita owners do buy video games, and some of them would go out and buy this, but I don't know if you're going to be able to make the case to continue through a long development cycle for a AAA caliber Vita game. I think the days of seeing Vita games for sale in stores are pretty much over.
Well, especially because a lot of those first-party published games. I think Freedom Wars is the last official first-party game. And if you look at like Little Deviants, Unit 13, like those studios closed like immediately after.
Gravity Days 2 is being worked on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the big question now, right? Yeah. Like, what if it's PS4? What if it's I mean, they soft announced it. What was that? That was like a Gamescom like 2 years ago, I think.
That was back when you were IGN's news editor.
Yeah. That's right. God, those were the days, huh?
But
now I think, like, what if that is PS4 only? Like, it's probably both, but like Sony's this weird history of announcing Vita games and then kind of backing off of it. Like Soundshapes, you know, started as Vita and then kind of moved its way up, which is awesome. Like, Soundshapes I actually do play more on my PS4. But it's a great Vita game, and if it had been an exclusive Vita game, I think I don't know if it would have moved units or anything, but I think it would have still been just as good of a game.
I feel like I've kind of alluded to this before on the show, but I think even aside from sales, the vision of trying to create the AAA home console experience on a small screen in any handheld anywhere just never really works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think even on the iPhone, most people aren't really playing games with headphones on. They're not playing, like, they're checking their email every now and then or getting texts. Like, that sort of immersion that you get of sitting on a couch with surround sound headphones and playing something like Bloodborne. Like, people just aren't looking for that on a handheld.
Like, I can play BioShock on my iPhone, but I would never.
But why would you do that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So why go to the trouble to create something original when it's so darn expensive?
Yeah,
instead, you can create the kind of games that have made Vita thrive. These wonderful kind of mid-tiered and independent games that work really well in a handheld experience, look beautiful on that screen.
Like, I think Guacamelee, Soundshape, stuff like that, where it was fantastic on Vita, but then, you know, trying to play something like Killzone, I'm like, it's cool and it's awesome they're doing this, but like,
this is how I want to play a shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even like something like Broken Age, which is like perfectly great on other platforms, but I'm really enjoying it on Vita. Like, I actually am enjoying it more than when I started on my Mac.
I'm hoping Bloodstain, that's the name of it, right? The Igarashi's Kickstarter.
Yes.
It's just trampling all these goals, but its next goal, I think,
it is like 11 days left.
Which that would be like, I would love to play that. That's a kind of perfect.
Totally.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, it's like, it's a bummer because there are so many good ideas that could have been viable on Vita, like the Batman Arkham Origins.
Yep.
What was that called?
Blackgate.
In the title. Batman Arkham Origins Blackgate.
Batman Origins Blackgate.
Yikes!
Well,
all right. Well, that's yikes of the week, starring Marty Sleep.
Everyone noticed I'm the only one not laughing.
Yikes of the week.
I'm not even repeating the name of that. Wow.
Anyway, I think
Fear of Beyond fan, mock up that box art. I know. Don't do that. Don't even do that.
That was by Armature. That had. Yep. I was more excited for that than I was for Arkham Origins. And exactly. And then when it came out, it just didn't quite work. And I think there have been a few, like Liberation.
Well, to be fair, I don't think that was really a great game.
Like, no, that's
was
what I'm kinda, saying,
that was more of the issue.
But like, I think on paper, that if that had, I guess what I'm saying is, if that had been a great game, like, could it have changed Vita's tides?
Well,
like, or if,
well,
like,
you're sort of thinking, if that was a great game and if Vita was selling more, would we be getting these sort of secondary experiences to all the big AAA games?
Would
there be a Witcher Vita game that's different than Witcher 3? Would there be a Shadow of Mordor game that's maybe like a 2D thing?
Well, because that's the thing, like, there's no third party, like, the if you look, right, if you look at Killzone, if you look at Uncharted Golden Abyss, like, obviously those are first party games, but you're really not seeing very many of those experiences that are by third parties. There was obviously AC Liberation, but that was in 2012.
Yeah.
And it's like there hasn't been, or maybe 2013, but there hasn't been another.
No, it's 12.
losing Monster Hunter for that time to 3DS.
That's huge.
Yep.
That was hard. I mean, that's the thing. Like, Vita is like, I'm not saying this hyperbolically, Vita is probably my favorite system that I own. Mm-hmm. I think I spend more time, because I travel a lot, or as I did in my previous job, and I kind of am now, like, I spend more time with my Vita than any other console or handheld.
You don't have a home. So.
Yeah. I am technically homeless right now.
Vita,
that's
your junkyard dog.
Thank you to Greg and Colin for letting me stay on their couch.
You're living under your Vita right now.
Yeah, but I love the Vita, and I really do think, like, it's a great little system, mm-hmm. and I think, like, there have been a lot of third-party efforts that tried and maybe didn't quite live up to what people mm-hmm. were hoping for. I would hate to see the Vita go away altogether. Like, I like that indies are keeping it alive. There are a lot of cool games coming that have Vita ports. I mean, like, Broken Age is awesome.
Yep.
There are, I don't know, like, I guess my brain is blanking right now, but there are a lot of indies and stuff.
Brain
blanking.
I was going to say, most of the Telltale stuff ends up on there. You know,
yeah,
which
Telltale
is like,
stuff.
I'm excited for Severed.
Yeah.
Severed, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Hyperlight Drifter, awesome, I think, is a Vita version. There are a lot. Like, there are a lot of cool upcoming indie games that are still going
to
be portable.
Like you said, last year at E3, like, you went to the Sony's booth, and there was just, like, two dozen Vitas lined up with all sorts of rad games.
Yeah, they don't talk about in the press conference.
Mm-hmm. It becomes a boutique system at this point. And that's what it always was to a degree, but, you know, that's really okay. The world needs its Neo Geos and its Sega Saturns. It needs this thing that, you know, this is the game to impress your, or the console to impress your friends with. I mean, you know, go out there and play wonderful things. Games designed for hardcore gamers are going to be targeted at this more and more here in this last end of the cycle because they know what the audience is going to be.
Also,
they know the attach rate.
With PlayStation Plus, it's one of those things where, like, every month I get a cool game to play on my Vita.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'm like, I already own this, but this is awesome that people can now play Hohokam.
But it also, like, I think the Vita was obviously very slow, like, early on. And so a lot of people did miss, like, Uncharted Golden Abyss and Unit 13, these games that I think you know, like, you look at them, if you didn't want to buy a Vita and you looked at them and you were like, I don't really need to, I'm not going to buy a Vita for this, like, you know, B-list Uncharted game or, like, whatever people thought it was upon first glance. But then if you, like, picked up the cheaper model, picked up the Borderlands 2 bundle or whatever, and now you have it, like, like, if you go back and play it for free, oh, wait, that Uncharted game is really good. And, like, Gravity Rush is really good.
The Vita was sort of, it was kind of created underneath that old Sony mentality of, like, you know, let's make this boutique, very expensive system
with proprietary memory.
That 3G, what was up with that? They never really did anything.
No one knew what that meant.
I think Mark Ryan is the only one I know who still has a 3G.
Yeah.
And it's
like, you look at the Sony now, that's just like the way they came out at E3 2 years ago, being like, our system's cheaper and you can trade games and everything's free for a blah, blah, blah. It's a nonstop party. Everyone wins. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, they were just kind of like, this was a couple of years after they were like, $600 PS3s and you'll get a second job. And then they were like, and they were like, look at the Vitas, you know, and they started talking about, like, I remember they were talking about, like, the handheld ghetto, and, like, we're gonna take the handheld out of the ghetto, and it's like, well, the ghetto's fine, like, we want to be in the ghetto, the ghetto's really fun, it's cheap, like, and it's where you see people playing handheld games now predominantly are on their iPhones, and they're playing, like, short, easy, whimsical, fun experiences, whereas, like, deep immersive things are just not really there. So I feel like it's a weird product of its time, but the way it will be remembered will be positively. People will look back at the Vita they'll really cherish it. And no system ends like,
every one ends with a mic drop.
It's a slow death.
Every video game system ever dies slowly. There's like these whimpering swan songs.
It dies with a FIFA game that only comes out in Brazil 6 years after.
The original PlayStation is the one kind of glorious exception to that because they had the backwards compatibility built right in.
Sure.
And so you were just sitting there going, and the thing, you know, you had it. good PlayStation games ended right around the moment that good PlayStation.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and PS2.
Nine, I think, yeah. Chrono Cross.
Yeah, I think PS2 had a graceful death.
Yeah.
Also,
I mean, like, PS2 was just like
Okami and Kingdom Hearts 2
and Persona 4. Like, yeah, and just that beautiful slim model in the very.
Well, even 5 years after that, you were like, "Wow, you're still alive!" Like, there were still PS2 games.
You got a Madden game.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with all that. We'll see what Sony has up.
I don't think the Vita is dead yet. I do think that indies will keep it alive for at least another year, and I think there are games that are great on it. It's funny though, because the games I play, like, I don't use touch, and I don't use, like, I remember when they first announced it as the NGP, whatever year that was, 2011, I guess, it was like, oh my god, like, it has every feature you could ever imagine in a handheld. Like, they were just like, every single thing I could think of.
It was the Homer Simpson car on paper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, like, I don't use any of those features.
Well, because everyone sort of overwhelmingly hated using a lot of those features. Like, Rear Touch really didn't work with a lot of stuff outside of, like, Tearaway and a few other things.
And that's the thing, like, Tearaway is the perfect example of what I think the Vita could have been, because Tearaway is so good and so smart. And Little Big Planet Vita is really, really good, too. Like, it uses those features in a smart way. But the early games, like Liberation, like Uncharted, it just felt a little more gimmicky. I mean, the launch of any system does that. Exactly. And I don't know.
To me, Tearaway is the only one that's done it right. And we're going to talk about Tearaway later, but Tearaway is
the one. Are we? I love Tearaway. It's a good game.
Yeah.
It's the Jared Petty of games.
That's how you end a segment.
Andrew, thank you for being so sweet.
Thank you for being you, Jared.
You guys are
Let's get ice cream after all.
I'm really good. I like ice cream.
You know, who has a great relationship? Marty and I. We just hate each other.
We love each other.
I love that you tweeted him, having you back in the same continent is insufferable.
Yeah. Marty and I had a Twitter war a couple months ago that was just one of my favorite things we've ever done.
What was the nerd fight about?
We were just
mean to each other on Twitter
for no reason.
Texting each other how much we were enjoying this.
Yeah,
people like, man, you guys seem really angry.
Are you guys breaking up?
Is this like repressed sexual tension?
No, we're just making fun of each other because we're both cartoon characters. Yeah, we're both ugly, awful, alcoholic bastards.
Okay, yeah,
that's a real talk.
You don't have to censor any of that.
No, leave it in there. Good.
What would be censored there?
I don't know. Why don't you figure it out?
Do you have to censor the word bastard? Jon Snow says it all the time.
You want some too? You want to come get some?
Yeah, I can take it.
You want to come set screen?
No, you're coming with me to get ice cream. You don't need to go over there.
And Andy's ice cream.
For the love of Christ, I'm trying to segue to the second story 20 minutes into this goddamn podcast.
Welcome to our new segment, For the Love of Christ.
I'm not writing that down. Whatever. I have to host a show. I'm not going to write that one, I swear. XCOM 2. That's IGN's IGN first for the month.
We need to start a list called PlayStation Please of games that are not announced for PlayStation but should, like this, Tomb Raider, and a bunch of other ones.
Yeah,
yeah. I like
just
that.
Those two.
That's actually a good idea,
and
Brian.
Mario Strikers.
Where's Mario Strikers?
I'm still holding on to that one.
I like that game.
Yeah. Tim Wisenhunt wrote in and said,
Mario and Sokka. What could go wrong?
could go wrong.
Have you ever played Super Mario Strikers?
Yes, I have.
That's a wonderful game.
I'm Italian. Sorry, I grew up playing Super Mario Strikers. That was my.
What?
That was playing kickball.
That was my childhood.
Yeah. Look, the dinosaur from next door is coming over.
Against Mario Batali.
Oh, there's Wario. Wario's here. He's going to fart on the ball and kick it through the net.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Tim Wisenhunt wrote it and said,
Beyond.
First revealed a game that I'm super excited for, XCOM 2.
Mm-hmm.
When I was catching up on my Twitter feed at home this morning and saw that Ryan McCaffrey posted a link to the announcement, I literally shouted in excitement. Much to my dismay,
awesome.
I like the idea that
his wife is like, is everything okay?
I was about to say his mom. We think Tim is different ages. I guess you could have a wife and a mom. You have a wife and a mom, right?
Yeah, a lot of people have wives and moms. You look to me like I'm an anomaly.
You are.
Or like he's 100 years old.
Yeah. But much to my dismay, he also said it will not be on consoles, and he'll explain why later. That is a new story we have going up, I believe, later this week. Maybe later this month.
Friday,
I think. Mm-hmm. Friday. All that setup leads to my questions. Do you think Xbox 2 or XCOM 2? Do you think Xbox 2 will come to consoles? Will XCOM 2 come to consoles? Have you had a game that you were very excited and become walled off due to some form of platform exclusivity? Rap, rap, pizza whistles.
Ooh, comedy button references.
That's my show.
Isn't that a debriefings reference?
Pizza whistles? Yeah, pizza whistles started way back in the IGN debriefings.
Oh, I remember.
Are those like candy whistles?
No, they're like whistles made of pizza. It's hard to explain. Okay. Let's just power through
it. We got through the question and then just went right back into the flag. Vietnam War.
So do you think XCOM 2 will come to home consoles? We'll talk about that soon, I guess.
The answer is no. XCOM 2 is PC exclusive.
So the PlayStation Please list now only has one game
right,
on it,
but
not including Mario Strikers.
The thing in this industry is that, I believe them when they say they don't have plans for it, but it's like, Yeah, they probably didn't plan to put BioShock on iPhone, but like that happened 8 years later.
And also, like, XCOM 2 Game of the Year Edition, or XCOM exactly. 2 mm-hmm. Enemy Within.
Mikami say if Resident Evil 4 came to any other platform, he would literally cut off his own head?
Exactly. Which is the best. Yeah. And we haven't seen him since.
No.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? So, obviously it's trite, but never say never. Like, I really do think that. Yeah, down the road, let's say XCOM 2 sells super, super well. Like, mm-hmm. if they can find a way to make it work, they'll bring it to
PlayStation. I don't know why I'm laughing. You say never. You're like a Demi Lovato movie.
Mm-hmm. But not
Demi Lovato movie.
But at that point, not in the foreseeable future. As for stuff being walled off by content, I mean, every Nintendo game ever. That's something that gets walled off, and we've gotten used to the fact we're not going to play that across.
But growing up, did you guys ever just not have a console where you were like, "Man, I wish I would have. I never had a Saturn, so I never got to play Panzer Dragoon Spy."
I was super late to PS1. I was like not a PlayStation kid at all. Like I was very into Nintendo, and then I got a PS1 very, very late, and so like I was trying to play catch up for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think like it's more. Last generation, it was more about like when they were playing like the back and forth of exclusives. Like I remember really wanting to play as the Joker in Batman Arkham Asylum, but you could only do it on PlayStation. And I was playing on Xbox.
That stuff really annoyed me.
Yeah,
I bought an Xbox to play Red Dead because I had been a PC guy up to that point. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I went out and bought a console to play Red Dead.
I was primarily playing PlayStation when Alan Wake came out, and I was like, oh, I really want to play Alan Wake. It's like stuff like that.
I mean, it's a little bit different for us now because we just sort of as our jobs, we have access to these consoles. We sort of need to have these consoles to stay up to date on things.
I feel like nowadays it's a little more acceptable or kind of it's like you should be a little bit more platform agnostic. And I know this is a PlayStation centric podcast, but like you should we're adults. Grow up. Like play games on other platforms. It's just a plastic box that is video games. Nobody
cares. I understand like the price.
That's a different thing. I think like the fanboyism and the actual buying a separate console for a game. But like, I mean, I know that like every system launch, like I bought my Xbox One at launch and I still don't really know why.
I did
because I was just like, there's going to be some cool experiences there. And I didn't really find them for a while.
I buy every system at launch and then find myself.
I do the same exact thing now.
Now, I don't buy systems at launch. I bought a Wii at launch because it had a good launch library and I was very happy with it. But I wait because I'm cheapskate.
What was the good launch
library? You had Wii Sports. Zelda.
Well, if you hadn't played it,
exactly. You had Zelda, you had Wii Sports, you had the stupid Rayman game where you threw cows. That was cute. You had WarioWare Smooth Moves. Yep. You had Paper Mario within the first month. You had
Trauma Center.
Trauma Center. Yeah, it had a really good launch.
You cut a man open in that game, right?
Take it back. The fine games. Lineup. Plus Virtual Console, which was amazing at the time.
Being so mean to me right now. Well, take it back.
I said it's ruined.
But having said that, then you have other things came along later, but I'm a cheapskate. I mentioned buying an Xbox, not here on the PlayStation podcast. I bought that at that point because it was cheaper than the PS3.
Yep.
And I think the price, these things are expensive.
I know, admittedly, like I get kind of, and I know I just went on a mini rant about fanboyism, but I get kind of pushed away by some PC gaming stuff when it's like, when it seems like the only way to play it is on the best PC in the world and I don't have one of those or the capacity to go build one.
Well, don't let those guys fool you. I PC is still my home platform. And despite what you hear most of the time, if you knock something down to moderate settings, you can play it on a moderate PC 90% of the time.
Yeah, and like seriously, like I think like the whole Steambox initiative like is a viable.
I know. I can't wait to see
really
that.
Think that's.
I mean, for someone who specifically said what he just said, who doesn't want to spend $1,200.
But Gofarb, you were also like you were penning those stories about the Steambox stuff when you worked here 2 years ago, and you're back, and that still hasn't come into fruition.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I don't think it's a viable platform in terms of like.
I think
the
idea of it was, but
let's talk about that though. Is my living room right now is a PC rigged up to my television set running Steam with their cool little whatever the interface is called for Steambox that they planned, and it runs there. I sit there with a controller and control my PC pretty much like a console and use it the same way. And the web browser's built in,
you're wired.
But it wasn't
special.
Hard. It wasn't just
you're a different type
I thought
of dude.
You were going to say you're wily.
But this was not a hard thing to set up at all.
I feel like you're the kind of guy that can get away with there's an outlet in the corner that has things, six things plugged into it.
What do you mean? Like outlet, like the Christmas story, Christmas tree thing?
Yeah, okay. And your wife's just like, I understand him. It's okay. I don't have that luxury.
There's some truth.
Gofarb stayed in my apartment for 2 weeks. It's very minimal in there.
Yeah, it is. There's a Brian Altano corner.
Oh, wow. What is the Brian Altano corner? What's in it?
It's prison.
It's a big picture of a pizza.
Lots of spaghetti.
A map of Italy.
That is weirdly accurate.
Yes.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about games that are coming to PlayStation, but we're going to talk about, well, not necessarily coming to PlayStation, but we're going to figure out what the hell is coming to PlayStation because we got a letter in
Ooh, look at that segue. That was a good segue.
Yeah, from Kevin Behar. What do you guys want to read this?
Oh,
letter?
I thought that was going to go pet Kevin Bacon. It was so close.
No,
Kevin Bacon writes this podcast
Joy
so often.
Joy Behar's husband, Kevin Behar.
6 degrees of Kevin Behar.
Did I ever tell you about how... never mind.
You might
I saw about Kevin Bacon's...
Schwantz?
Penis at San Diego Comic-Con 2012.
Like
the Hard Rock Hotel. We were both going to the bathroom at the same time, and their bathroom was a trough, and there are no...
yeah.
There are no dividers, yeah. And we were next to each other.
And you looked?
I looked.
What'd you think?
I mean, it was nice. I don't know. It was fine.
It shows up in Hollow Man. It's on film. Like, you can see it in the movie if you want.
No, but it was invisible. I saw it was not invisible. It was visible to the naked eye, and that was my eye.
Wow.
Brian, you want to read this slide?
I don't want to read anything now.
To Kevin Bacon's attorneys, to send your libel suit, contact...
I said it was nice.
Man, it's like that trough at 21st Amendment.
It Kevin Behar asks, hey, Bianco, Sony currently has 12 first-party studios under their belt and only 5 have natively released a game, while Studio Japan and Sony Santa Monica have taken on more of publishing roles with Bloodborne and The Order 1886. Sony also has deep relationships with various studios outside of their first-party stable, i.e. Housemarque, Quantic Dream. This begs the multi-million dollar question, what the hell are all of these other studios up to? Some studios have multiple teams, i.e. Naughty Dog, Guerrilla Games, Media Molecule. Which studios will be showing off their games at E3, and which studios will be showing their games at Paris Games Week? Which studios are you anxiously awaiting a reveal for, fingers crossed, for Guerrilla Games Project Horizon to be at E3? Thanks, and keep up the great work, Beyond. Also, Andrew Goldfarb sucks.
It doesn't say that. I have the paper, Brian.
I added that.
They're all making The Last Guardian.
Right, exactly. It's a group effort. Well, I mean, I think it's really interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, how many soldiers need to fall into that hole from 300? Everyone is making The Last Guardian. Come on.
I love that image. It's just developers piling.
It's like lemmings, but like each one's like holding.
See, every time I make a reference to that dumb.
I think it's interesting because I think the first party studios, everyone feels like they're so shrouded in secrecy. And it's like, what are they doing? Are they just hanging out? But at the same time, like, we do know Guerrilla has a project, and we do know Media Molecule is a project. Like, so it's not like, like, they do have something happening.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, obviously they're all working on something. Sony Bend is working on something. Quantic Dream is working on something. But
But Quantic Dream isn't owned. Like, Quantic Dream is.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, and that's what's interesting, right? Is like, they're. There are clearly like a trillion PS4 projects in the works, plenty of these first-party studios have cool stuff happening, maybe even beta stuff. But like, I think that like Media Molecule was on stage with the tech demo, and they were like, "Yeah, this will be part of our PS4 project."
Yep.
And Guerrilla, like, obviously there is like a very heavy-handed
RPG-ish dinosaur open world.
We've seen concept art for it, exactly. So it's like,
that sounds so awesome.
I mean, like, I don't know. We were talking about this last week a little bit. Like, I would rather that stuff stay. Like quiet, and then when they're ready to announce it, they announce it. But rather than if they announce it this E3 and then takes 4 years to come out, everyone freaks out.
But I understand people's frustrations, because when you look at first party lineups, like the first party Microsoft lineup is a lot better right now.
I know.
Just because we have, like, we know Forza 6 and Halo 5 and Gears
Fable.
Of War that Fable's
well, but it exists, it's good or not.
But where you have, like, with Sony, you're just like, man, aside from Naughty Dog, like,
And the bigger problem is that they did that thing, I think it was at Gamescom 2 years ago, where they literally were like, all of these studios are working on PS4 games, and they showed all their logos, and then we've seen like two of those announced.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know.
That.
Supermassive isn't first party, right? The Until Dawn dudes. Yeah.
No.
So we have Sony Bend. We don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks Siphon Filter, but I don't know if that's a thing people care about anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I have no. I mean, God, Sony Bend has been working on something for a pretty long time, I would assume. Because, like, was their last. Did they do anything after Golden Abyss?
I don't think so. No.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And no.
I mean, Santa Monica obviously has, I mean, multiple projects.
Well, they said there's a God of War.
Yeah. And they're helping, like, they're helping Giant Sparrow with Edith Finch.
Yeah, the what is it?
The
X-Dev. The
X-Dev. Yep. But then we have, like, you know, we assume Gran Turismo is being worked on by Polyphony.
And they said as much to us years ago. They would at least do a PS4 version, not something new.
I would be willing. I think that Media Molecule is working on something with Morpheus. I feel like that's a really – that's like a tight fit.
And that's the thing, right? I think that might be cool. What the delay has been. I know
because originally it was like – that thing was like very move-centric. It was sort of like you were controlling like a puppet thing.
And apparently like Evolution had – I think it was Evolution – so there was like some kind of VR central dev unit within one of the studios. I don't know, man. I think Morpheus is actually a really interesting game changer. I think Morpheus could be what has been the holdup for all of these. I would hope, just like we were talking about with Vita and some of the gimmicky things, I would hope that it's sort of like games that are coming out natively to PS4 with like enhancements if you get Morpheus, mm-hmm. or like a Morpheus version or something. But like, I would hope that like we don't see these studios making Morpheus only games.
Yeah, you don't want to see them divide their install base.
There's that, and it's just that I'm personally just not. I'm never going to be a VR guy, and that's totally not me.
Thank you for saying that, by the way, because I'm not with you.
Yeah. I don't want to be closed-minded about it, and I will always try things, and maybe I'll change my mind. But it's like I've never.
He likes ice cream.
Let's talk after the show.
I've never worn glasses. And so when I go to a 3D movie, I have a point. I promise I'm coming around. Well, I've worn glasses, but I've never like had my own pair of glasses. Thank you for the offer there. You're back in my good list.
Thanks.
In case you're listening to this on your headphones, that was just awful.
When I go to a movie and wear 3D glasses, it's like super distracting to me and I'm not immersed in it. And with VR, at least what I've experienced so far, like strapping that thing to my face, like no matter how incredible it is just for me personally, like very, very hard to feel immersed because I feel the weight of this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because mm-hmm. I feel like it takes those sort of moments, those epiphanies. Like Max went over it, what was it, like 2 months ago or so. Yeah. He was talking about his Morpheus demo, I think from GDC, one where he was the dude who was like strapped to the – he was like with getting the interrogated and everything.
That sounds awesome.
And he, like his story was like that was the moment for him where he was like, oh my God, I get it now.
It like sold VR to him.
Yeah. And so I'm personally too, like I've had really cool tech demos, but I'm still waiting for that thing.
I agree with what Goldfarb's saying though in that like if we are kind of in the middle of – a drought-ish of first-party developed software on the PlayStation 4, then I wouldn't want them to split those hairs and start mm-hmm. making Morpheus-exclusive stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather be able to say, like, oh, these guys are making this thing. I can play it on PS4 rather than it – all of our – we're moving all of our studios to these, like, headset games. Like,
I'm seen this so many times. Like, every dev does this. It's like your console is doing well. Like, let's – or every publisher, rather. Like, let's keep – on that train. Yep. I think Sony's smart enough to do that, but it's like, don't do the Kinect and the Move and all that thing where there's suddenly another peripheral and you have to, it's another barrier to entry where you have to buy this other thing to make it work. Like, mm-hmm. I think Sony at this point, by how they've made every correct move so far this generation, I think they get it. And I would think that they've learned their lesson from past stuff and they're just going to say, hey, like, this is our rad new PS4 game. This is the new Gran Turismo, but if you have Morpheus, it's even cooler and you can do XYZ.
I think No Man's Sky's going to be the same thing.
Totally.
All that said, I think you, to make this thing run, you are going to have at least one exclusive killer.
Mm-hmm. It needs a killer.
You need something that only works with this, that is compelling and says to you, and by the way, and even and it may be the pack-in. I mean, this may be, you're going to need a Super Mario Brothers for this thing, whether you pack it in or sell it.
Yeah,
that's a fair point. It works both ways. Yeah, you can't put it out to die.
The Kinect comparison's a good one, and not in that we're calling this like a broken gimmicky peripheral because all signs show that it's not. But Microsoft specifically called the Kinect, they treated the Kinect like it was a console launch in the middle of last generation. They said, we are coming out with this new peripheral, but we were treating it like it's brand new hardware and we're having a midnight launch for it and everything. We're treating this like it's a brand new console, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's something Sony's going to have to do, and you guys are right. It's going to have exclusive games for it.
What Sony could do that Microsoft never did with Kinect is actually give me a reason to buy the thing besides what looked like mostly Wii knockoffs. I mean, the Kinect's full potential was never explored. Mm-hmm. VR, there are things you can do with a VR game that you cannot do any other way.
Well, I
and
think
if they can give me that.
I think that the target audiences that VR are reaching for are inherently much older than anything that the Wii Remote or the Kinect ever did. Because the last thing you want to do is take a 7-year-old kid and put a helmet on him.
I mean,
or maybe you do if he's annoying.
Yeah. I mean, but also, VR is so much bigger than video games.
Yeah.
Like, VR is going to be putting yourself at sporting events, putting yourself at concerts, putting it on, and all of a sudden it's a live feed of a cafe in Rio.
And even
sitting in a gorgeous corner on a sunbaked day.
That's the Google I/O thing they just showed, like the adventure thing. Googlio. It's also that.
I love that. I should not laugh at that.
It's even as simple as like I can be in my apartment watching a movie. And instead of watching it on my 32-inch TV or whatever, I'm suddenly feeling like I'm in a movie theater, and it like looks as though it's
and
like.
I can commit a home invasion. You don't even know it.
Oh, I can't wait. That's gonna be my favorite thing.
I'm so glad you said that, though, Marty, because I mean, there is a reason that Facebook bought Oculus, and it's kind of gone quiet after that. Like, oh well, what are they up to now? But you know, if you go back to your William Gibson and stuff, this really does have the potential to be like a world changer.
Yeah,
and we're not thinking of that in that terms because we're thinking video games, but. Yeah. Oculus or Morpheus or one of these really could change the way we interact with each other.
Well, and that's what everyone talks about. Video games are an input and feedback loop, right? Mm-hmm. And so like the input has generally been you know, you're holding a controller in your hands, or occasionally it's you are the controller with Kinect, like, or whatever. They try motion, try touch, whatever. But the feedback is the thing that has largely remained. I am looking at a screen and there's a digital character on it, and I know, like, I know that limit. I know that there's like that glass wall between us. Theoretically, like, VR is the end goal of it, is for that feedback to be as realistic as the conversation we're having right now.
Yeah.
So it's like, it is as though there's someone right in front of me, and I'm so immersed that I look to my right and I don't see my like living room wall. I see an empty field next to me, and I see like, I left this house and I turn back around and I can see that house behind me. Like, yeah, I think like, there's potential for
that. There is
that.
Something so tragic about all of that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something really dark and really scary and dystopian about all that. And I think it's amazing. I think it's wonderful that I can go see, I can go to like my niece's birthday party from across the country, even if she hasn't been alive for 10 years or wherever they're going with this.
No, because he's actually talking about something that could happen.
I'm world building the tragic escapism that will come with these things. And there's something really dark about all this. And I think it's fantastic, but I also think that, like, you kind of, there should, there's no way to say this the right way, but I think that, like, I feel like there needs to be a certain level of acceptable psychological evaluation before you're really allowed to immerse yourself into one of these things.
And think about
full
it
time.
Think about 600 hours in The Witcher or whatever, as it is right now, just with a controller in your TV. Imagine trying to get out of that world if you're that obsessed with
it. I couldn't imagine.
All encompassing.
Yeah. Like, it's gonna be one of those things where it breaks reality for you.
I feel like we just sound like old men right now, though.
No, I mean,
no.
Like,
no. This is important. I mean, we're all, you know, increasingly, there's fewer and fewer reasons to even leave our houses.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't have a job that demands we come in, or something in manufacturing, or we have to interact directly, you know, we can do our shopping this way. We can have our food delivered to us. We can, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yes, it sounds like an old man gripe, but the fact is, we might be forgetting about something so core and genetic that we're losing
touch
with.
And I feel like you could put somebody in front of the most beautiful, real thing in the world right now, and they will rather look at their phones. Yeah. And that's already like this tiny screen that we carry everywhere that is escapism for us. Losing touch with the even the basic realities of going out and talking to people or meeting people or visiting places or having a human interaction in some capacity.
I'm sorry, Marty. It can make us conservative. It can make us narcissistic. It can make us self-absorbed. It can make us forget that we're a part of a larger whole that have to watch out for each other. I mean, I think that can be a danger where we become so absorbed.
It's scary, too. Yeah. Like, I went to the Virgin Islands like a month ago, 2 months ago, and like, I just deleted work email from my phone, didn't look at anything, deleted Facebook, deleted Twitter, just only had my phone on me, like, in case I got lost and needed maps or whatever. And like, having that break was like, I haven't done that in my adult life.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Yeah. So we were talking about this morning.
Yeah.
How you were talking
I just
about.
Did this too.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about that.
So I just came back from a 2 week honeymoon in Europe, and
speaking of Italy, I went to France.
I went to a bunch of places.
You took a train over to Italy, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. So I can actually speak of Italy. But I went on my honeymoon, which is great. You know, like, you find someone that you really care about, and you go on adventures, and that's awesome. You know, and it's very different than a lot of what, like, I think the thing is, I travel a lot for this job, but it's not traveling in that capacity. Like you just said, of shutting off your work email and just sort of exploring a real world. Like, there's a lot of people that want video games to be more realistic, but they've never really left their town. And I don't think you really have the capacity to talk about how you want things to be more real when you haven't seen enough of reality. So, I mean, I went to Europe, and I went to Barcelona, and I went to Paris, and I went to Nice and Versailles, and I took a train to Italy, and I had a pizza, like a cartoon Italian. And I said, ah, boppity boopity.
And you shook your rolling pin.
Yeah.
Then you went and played some Mario Strikers.
I had flour all over my mustache, and I got back on the train. And it's great. And I came back and I was like, man, time to catch up on all the media I missed. Like, I went to go buy tickets for Mad Max, and I'll go see it this week. And then I'm like, you know, I better play The Witcher, and I better play Splatoon and all this other stuff. And I went to play The Witcher, and I got about 25 minutes in before I was kind of like, this is really boring me right now. And I started thinking about why. And I'm like, why would one of the highest rated games of the year, this immersive, gigantic, incredible open world with bustling characters and beauty everywhere, be boring to me? And I think it's because, like, I just kind of did that in real life. Like
you
I
just
went,
saw like real yeah, beauty.
Like yeah. I went to a small town in Italy that I've never heard of before, and I had no map, and I walked up a mountain, and there was a little town there with 100 people living in it, and there was a cathedral that was like 2,000 years old, and I walked into it, and it was terrifying.
And it was just
and I'm the only person in there, and they had this statue of dead Jesus laying there, and no one told me like it's safe, come on in. It was just like one of the most video game things I've ever done.
So you saw that, and then just went and got pizza, and that same thing.
I saw that, and I got pizza, and then I had a beer, and I had some Nutella ice cream, and I got out of there. And it felt like I did a bunch of weird side quests in a strange NPC village that I didn't know anyone, and I had strange interactions with people, and I bought stuff with money I didn't understand, then I left. And it was one of the most video game things I've ever done, and then I'm kind of like, you know what, like this is it's hard to jump back into a game like that or jump back into a world like that when for the first time in a long time, it's my first vacation in like 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not me preaching you, oh, vacation more. But like it was nice to go do something like that. And it made me come back and want to have kind of more similar experiences like that. And yeah. I had a hard time connecting with the video game world because I think there's still so much out there to see myself. Yeah. And it's like, again, it's hard to say that on a video game podcast, yeah. but that's kind of where my head is at right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I don't know. I think one of the reasons I didn't, something like GTA 5 didn't connect with me.
Yeah.
Like I understood it's an amazing achievement. I totally get why everyone adores it, but sort of the exploring a city part, I'm like, well, I do that literally every day.
Every day.
I
except
wander
with
around,
alcohol.
Yeah, except yeah. with alcohol. I wander around an amazing city every day, and every time I travel
and
to,
NPCs yell random crazy things
yeah,
at you.
Yeah, I live on, like, in the worst neighborhood yeah. of, like,
you live in the GTA yeah. of San Francisco.
I do.
Where you walk down the street and someone's like, hey, baby, and then a car hits somebody. It's very GTA.
Yeah. But every time I, like, travel to L.A. or New York or Chicago for work, like, yeah. I just wander around those cities and experience them. And I understand, like, when I played the hell out of GTA 4, and I think that's because at the time I was, like, living – I was a college kid in Milwaukee, yep. and I wasn't traveling, and I wasn't exploring the city. Yep. And so that escapism – I did that escapism through the game, whereas the escapism I look for in games now are something very different. It's not, like – I don't want to go somewhere that I could literally go by opening my front door and walking
down the street. Right. That's exactly it. Like, to me, escapism and realism are very different things for me. Like I don't want to really escape into the most brilliantly beautiful realistic world where you can run your fingers through the blades of grass, because like I should be doing that myself. I mean, I look like the type of dude that would get arrested for running his fingers through the blades of grass, but still. I should be like, I mean, if I was in a park and I started running, like that's the cops would show up. But I should be out and experiencing stuff. And when I play a video game and I escape, I want to go to like a weird, crazy, different alien world that I can't go to. Mm-hmm. I want to visit like a distant planet. I want to go try something artistically experimental that's different than anything I've ever done, you know?
Well, I think as we get older, once we're past childhood, we don't learn all that much new. I mean, we learn facts. We learn things for our jobs.
I think your brain caps at a certain point.
Yeah. And so a lot of
I'm Republican forever now.
Well, that was one. But a lot of the
Where's
learning,
my gun?
A lot of the learning we do later in life is relearning things or remembering things that we already knew and having them brought back into contrast. Mm-hmm. You know, death has that effect on us. Love has that effect on us. I think that some of the best video game escapism and the things that still do resonate for me are the games that take me to maybe a very different kind of place and then remind me at the end or in the course of it of something about the real life that I live in that I've forgotten, and that's what makes it powerful or poignant. I think about, you know, you think about the end of do you ever read the Winnie the Pooh books?
Yeah.
The AML. You know,
those are dark books.
Oh yeah, you get to the end and like Christopher
Spoilers
Robin's
for Winnie
like
the Pooh.
It's like I have to go away now and I can never come back.
Yeah.
And Pooh Bear's like, I don't understand. And Christopher Robin has to leave him, and Pooh never understands why Christopher Robin has to go or
it's
why
like
he can't
Harry
come
and the
back.
Hendersons.
Is that? It's exactly.
It's
like
pure. It's pure fantasy, but it shows you something that you've almost managed to forget about life.
Yeah. Is it to teach children about death? Do you think?
It's to teach children about growing up.
It's to teach children that if an adult man has constant dreams about a bear being friends with a tiger, he's crazy.
And that's what it's teaching you. Everything of its beauty,
and that has to die when you grow up because you can't carry that with you in any sociable, acceptable environment.
So, Winnie the Pooh analogies aside, no, he had to grow up. That's why he had to leave and couldn't come back, and Pooh couldn't understand.
Yeah.
But it's a fantasy story that reminds us of something poignant about life. Video games can do that, and that's when they're beautiful. But you know, again, I love where the show goes.
Yeah, what a weird little segment this was.
It's a great segment. I'm so happy about it.
Beyond. There's your Roper report.
Slightly different direction, more video game talk.
That's right, we're back.
We're back. Keith Ruiz, you wrote a letter.
You don't print these double-sided.
Letter. What?
You don't print these double-sided.
You want me to read this?
Yeah, you can read this. Andrew, shut up. Just fan yourself.
What are you,
like
why are you fanning yourself?
Fan yourself like a, like a Byzantine emperor.
You're from
emperor.
Texas.
I'm not from Texas.
You're literally from.
I do declare.
That's Georgia.
Whatever, he's fanning himself like he's about to fall on a fainting couch. Just loosen up your corset, you
Shout
weirdo.
Out to Chris Roper. Hey guys, I'm a new listener to the podcast, and I really only had one question I wanted to ask. Sony insists on giving us more God of War, even if we are burned out on it, but there is one series I would love to see return instead, and in saying that, I'd love to see a sequel to the PS2 game War of the Monsters. It's no secret that kaiju are bigger than ever, no pun intended, with Pacific Rim and the like, aka Godzilla, this could be the perfect time to give us a new one for the PS4. So what do you guys think? I know there are some kaiju fans among you. At least bring it up to some of the Sony guys at E3 if you get a chance. Oh, man, I love that concept of us being at the bar being like, yo, you guys like kaiju? And they're
what do you think of War of the Monsters?
You want to sink $2 million in a year or two in a kaiju game?
Yes, I want to be that guy. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, we are getting PS4 Godzilla this year, but there's no local multiplayer.
Really?
PS4 Godzilla is coming. Yeah. And it's these neat like filters put over it to make it look like old movies. And I'm like excited. And I'm like, nope, you have to play multiplayer online.
That's a Damon Hatfield scoop.
Yeah, and I just like, what do you do with that?
I loved the, there was one or two Godzilla fighting games on the GameCube that were really dumb but really fun.
Godzilla Destroy All Monsters is good. The old SNES fighting game is really good. Mm-hmm. But there's all these weird Godzilla games. So you had Godzilla Real Time Attack Simulator where you played as like the Japanese government attacking Godzilla.
I would love Earth Defense Force that's like Godzilla.
That'd be great.
Or Rampage. Remember Rampage?
Earth Defense Force, another game that's
Rampage was not so good when you come back.
Well, Rampage was kind of one of the first kaiju games, right?
Yeah, it was
I would say
first.
Primal Rage was also.
That was dinosaurs, not kaiju.
Well,
they're big monsters.
They're big monsters, and there's tiny
monsters,
people underneath them.
They burped and flatulated.
Farted
and
peed on each other.
Yeah, but there was that awesome C64 Godzilla game. What was that thing called? Oh, it was really good. You destroyed cities, and it was fun.
Yeah. I would love that. I think like the issue is sort of like the scale of it all. And how you sort of design that. Mm-hmm. A fighting game would be easier, like making it with destructible environments.
Well, they did pull it. Yeah, there was a neat 2D fighter they did for the Super Nintendo. They ported it to a few other things, and it wasn't as good. But the
Clay Fighter?
No, it's just a Godzilla themed fighting game, like sprite based, really pretty, neat sound effects.
On Super Nintendo?
Yeah, it was on the Super Famicom. It never came out over here.
I want like an open world GTA style game where there's occasionally kaiju battles.
That
and you're just doing missions, driving around, listening to DJ Premier, like, and all of a sudden
original kaiju.
Have you played Attack of the Friday Monsters?
No, I heard about it though.
No, you're like the little kid in shorty shorts from every like Godzilla movie that's wandering around in the periphery.
Yeah.
You play as that kid and you're just living your everyday life, and then like once a week, kaiju show up and fight.
Yeah.
It's really neat. That's fun, on 3DS, I think.
The fun thing about GTA is like they probably could.
Yeah.
Like, there are like UFOs and stuff, right? They could throw a couple kaiju in there.
Totally.
DLC. So, kaiju DLC confirmed.
What? That's not confirmed at all. That's IGN's news editor, Andrew Goldfarb, just lied to you all. So going back to this, what sort of dormant PlayStation series would you like to see come back? Can you think of any?
About that?
I actually really would like to see another Siphon Filter. Like, I know it's kind of become like a running thing, but like I think those games are really fun and they're smart.
Yeah, and like I'd love to see, because they took it. I mean, there was no PS3 version. There was a pretty good PSP game.
I believe that was the last one.
I'd be interested to see what. I mean, we had that fake engine demo of Medieval leak a few weeks. Well, not leak, because it wasn't real. Like, that's one of those series, like, they put a lot behind that I'd be interested in. I'd like to see someone doing something with Maximo again.
Yeah,
me wonder what they were planning with PlayStation All-Stars. Like, if they were planning to kind of kick off a couple of those franchises.
Yeah, to see how the response to some of those characters were. Yeah.
If we're talking about stuff that just showed up on PlayStation platforms and nowhere else, I would still kill for a Einhander sequel I'm never going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Bushido Blade.
There's a lot of PS1 games, and there's stuff like Tomba and Parappa.
I would want something like.
Yeah, have they not made a new Parappa game? That's weird.
Well, I mean, you've got Rimjima Lamy, and then nothing after that, right?
I would want something with Ape Escape. Like, I feel like that's a franchise that went in so many weird diagonals. Like, it was sort of like the WarioWare or Monkey Ball, where they just started slapping the name on it, and it didn't actually mean anything anymore.
Remember when Super Monkey Ball was actually like.
Super Monkey Ball 1 and 2 were like
launch game,
some of the best games.
Sure. Did you know that Justin Davis, who works in our office, was like third in the world at competitive Super Monkey Ball?
Yep.
and everything went downhill.
Yeah.
He also owns touchfuzzygetdizzy.com.
Touchfuzzygetdizzy, and I think another couple.
Mm-hmm. Also, crackwhore.com goes to IGN.
And stormtroopers.com, right?
Stormtroopers, yeah. As
but yeah, cool. Ape Escape.
Yeah.
Beyond.
We'll see. Do you think any... What? We'll see if any of those are going to be at E3. My guess... No, they won't.
Thanks, Keith.
The PlayStation press conference is just Tomba and Super Monkey Ball. Everyone's like horribly disappointed.
you picked this one, Brian. You want to read this last one?
Yeah,
letter?
Sure.
Yeah.
So obviously a small independent gathering of creative like-minded people is happening in the downtown Los Angeles regional area in 2 weeks at a small hotel called E3.
That's my favorite hotel.
There's literally thousands of press conferences this year.
Literally.
Now, Alex asks, are E3 press conferences worth it? Hello, Beyond Crew. Beyond, two things to ask. First, do you think press conferences like the ones done at E3 are worth doing anymore? Would a Nintendo-style event be more useful for consumers? Are the live events worth it? Although I personally love the hype and content IGN creates around E3, I think it's not worth all the money the game companies put into the press events. I'd rather see them invest in making more games. Secondly, Marty, it's been 9 months. Where is the Duck Dynasty review we were promised? I just got to know if I should pick it up or not. Beyond, it's Alex, Soundman, 5000 on PS. And go add him, play games with him. Play Duck Dynasty with him. He obviously needs people to play with.
E3 transforms into the buildup for Christmas for me.
Yeah.
I realize this is terribly unprofessional and I don't care. I get really, really excited about E3.
Any of us who don't get excited shouldn't be.
Yeah, we're enthusiast press.
Yeah, I know. I see people who are really jaded about E3, and it is a crazy workload from this side, but like, I don't know, this is like my, I think, eighth or ninth.
This is my seventh. Is it really or not? But do you?
I went in high school.
I went to
you played StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, I went in 2000. So I went as a high school senior. I went to 2004.
I thought you said Star Fox. I was like, geez, how long has he been doing?
He played Star Fox 64. I went in 2004, 2005, 2006, and then 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Yeah,
however many that is. Anyway, that aside, I still get excited, and I think. It is like that press conference day, like 2 weeks from today, is like the most fun day of the year to do this job.
I mean, that being said, I've been to, all the press conferences, obviously, save for Bethesda and Square, because these are new this year. I've been in the audience of all the other ones at one point or another. Honestly, watching them stream on IGN is just as good as being in that room.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
To be honest, like, there is something about that energy, but there's also... Like, hey, a lot of times you're in the back. Like, yeah, it's cool to be live at a basketball game in the back, but you know where you get a better view? In front of your TV.
Totally.
I've actually never been to one of the actual live. I've been to, like, Gamescom conferences, but I've never been to any E3 conference in person.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been to tons. Yeah.
The last Nintendo one. Yeah.
I was too. I feel like my problem with a lot of the press conferences is that being there, I think press conferences are fine. I mean, we talked about this in the show a couple weeks ago, how they're really stupid and awkward, but they do a good job of sending the message out. But being in the room feels really disingenuous because I'm almost always convinced that there's plants.
Applause plants. Absolutely.
Not like
ferns.
Well, the applause is so fervent. Like, they're so excited.
Yeah. And because someone's like, and that's why we're happy to announce that the PlayStation family continues to grow. And people are like, there's a grown family. I really love the PlayStation. Like, it's just, don't do that. No one does that unless you work for the company. Yeah. And then, you get that kind of awkwardness, which is really funny. I love that. That's palpable and beautiful when it's just somebody.
I want to roll back for a second to what you said. Do you feel like they're actually well done? Because I think more often than not, I think about 60-40, they're bad.
Oh, I agree.
Watch them, but I think that I'm often shocked by how poorly a lot of them come off, considering the amount of planning that goes into them.
High highs and low lows.
Well, yeah. So more so than the amount of planning, I think it's shocking that the amount of backlash they get still continues to help produce and create new versions of the exact same mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, people make press conferences where there are just laughable parts. Like, some guy comes out and he's like, I'm Mr. Caffeine, I love coffee. And we're like, die, what are you doing? Stop it. Show us your game trailers. Or like Pele's like, I really like children, so that's why this is soccer game. And we're like, what are you doing? Stop. Or Sean White's like, here's pictures of my family trip. Like, don't do it. And then they do that every year and they keep making more of them. And we're all making fun of them in the sidelines. And now there's Twitter where there's millions of people being like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
I mean, the one thing you have to keep in mind is that the parts of the conference we love are great.
Yeah.
But the conference is also for the buyers at Walmart.
Exactly.
You want to be like, Madden's going to sell a bajillion copies. Yep. Most of us don't care about the Madden E3 demo, but I bet during that EA conference they're going to devote 10 minutes to it because that whoever buys games from Walmart and Best Buy are going to be like,
it's some guy with like a Bluetooth earpiece and he's like, you see that Pele game?
Yeah.
Well, it's Pele and he's got his own soccer game.
That's why I think
order a million of them.
I think Alex has the right idea in this email, which is that Nintendo's consumer-facing Direct is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of redefine what these conferences are meant to do. Mm-hmm. Because, I think E3 is becoming increasingly irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think Gamescom slowly gets bigger every year, and I think having it open to consumers is a big deal. I think, the reason shows like PAX have been able to do so well is because, gaming has become more than just – it's, a huge billion-dollar industry, and people – part of that is the community around it, and is that, they should probably be open to the public. And I think these, very small focused trade shows like GDC or DICE can still exist, but E3, the spectacle of it, has kind of been replaced by these consumer shows. And so I don't know. I'll be really curious to see where E3 is in 5 years.
Can I ask you any inside baseball question on that? I wonder.
Can you? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay. All right.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. So since I can, behind the curtain there. So even with the spectacle, do you think the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on in E3 is worth the trouble? I mean, we're talking about the spectacle end, and that's what gets everybody excited. It's a free commercial. They got free commercial time since everybody's there. Yeah. But do you think the business and stuff that does happen on that floor still justifies the existence of the company?
I mean, the meetings are always going to happen, but when it was tiny and in Santa Monica and split between hotels, that business still happened.
But didn't everybody hate it?
Of course. It was a huge catastrophe, and I understand why they brought E3 back in its current form, but it's also those business meetings are just as likely to happen at GDC or DICE or just privately in offices. I think E3 is a time when everyone's in the same place, and I still love it, and I'm giddy like a child walking the floor, and I like that there's this weird constant to it. You always know where EA's booth is, and Nintendo's in the same place, and Sony's in the same place. I get some kind of weird happiness from it. It's a security blanket event for me. Every E3 is, different, but it has this sameness to it.
Yeah, and it, you go through that, we know it's going to be very long days.
Yes.
Whether you're working in the war room, whether you're working back on home team, whether you're on the show floor, it's going to be very long, arduous days.
I mean, hell, even if you're watching the streams, it's a long day.
It's a full day.
Especially this year, because it leads into Sunday and Tuesday.
If you're, what is it, Tuesday morning, you're watching Nintendo and Square at the same time.
Like Nintendo and Square,
One's on your phone, the other one's on a monitor.
No,
if your boss is there, he's fodder.
Yeah, I'm doing wiki coverage for both those at the same time. I'm still trying to figure out how
that's
going to work.
You got this.
Yeah.
But there's this note. I mean, Alex Soundman 5000 asks here about, them sort of investing the money towards making more games. The amount of money that goes into marketing and sales and stuff like that in this industry is staggering. Yeah. It's actually, I mean, it's a significant portion of game budget. This is all part of that.
To get on the sides of buses in San Francisco and to get trailers during the NBA Finals.
To be painted on the side of the Figaro Hotel.
Or the top of E3, which is Call of Duty. Just take all their money and they just throw it right up there every single year.
And that's why I don't think it's necessarily going away anytime soon. It is – E3 is here for years to come. I just think there are trends that I think I'll be curious to see now that there are 755 PAXs, I'll be curious to see what kind of the breaking point is, where the consumer shows versus the trade shows.
Like South was almost that breaking point.
Yeah.
I think we're getting close.
Well, I think it's what happens is there becomes more shows and there becomes less at each show.
But now diluted over the course of the year.
But now Sony's got Paris Game Week and they've also got their Sony Con they did this year.
Yeah. Oh, PlayStation. PSX,
or last year, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I mean there's a lot
to go this year.
Everything's kind of spread out. I like I said, we talked about the Nintendo thing. I do like their style of Direct. I actually, what I appreciate more from it is the frequency of it. Like the fact that we got a mini Direct today, and we'll get another one in E3.
That's
and
cool.
We'll get
the Direct was able to highlight smaller games.
Yeah.
The Dr. Mario thing and Chibi Robo.
So I'd love to see Sony do stuff like that, which every couple of weeks or every couple of months, they're just like, hey, here's a half an hour of what we're working on.
Especially if Shuhei hosts it, I would watch anything.
Yep.
It could just be him reading a list of products.
Yeah, Shuhei and Ryan Clements, best friends forever.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
I got really excited when Shuhei tweeted that there was a Bloodborne DLC coming.
I'm super excited about that. Very cool. DLC. I bet you're gonna cut a wolf open.
Oh yeah, you fight a whole wolf inside of a.
Be over. Like I saw
tauntaun?
Someone tweet out. They said what I want the DLC to be is all of those coffins that are chained up in the game.
Oh god,
the chains open up And like throughout the whole game,
that is horrifying.
So it's just like hundreds of coffins.
Oh my god, that's horrifying.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Great.
Did you get into that game?
I haven't even tried it. I haven't been home to play a console in so long.
Okay,
that's because you've been in other people's
homes. I'm a traveling man. Yeah.
You are a squatter. Well, that was good. That was good. That was a good little show. We're gonna end with. I'll do my PlayStation Essential.
I bet I can guess what it is.
Yep, it's written there. It's literally right there with an exclamation point.
And it teased it earlier.
Yeah, and it teased it
earlier. The thing written with an exclamation point after it is Marty.
Nope, the thing right here is Tearaway with an exclamation point.
Okay, fair enough. It's
both have them.
You monster. Yes, so I think the first portable entry into this, I guess you said Guacamelee, which could be. Oh, and you said Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah.
All right, so the first Persona 4 Golden. Side of five for it.
The hunt for fish sticks.
Tearaway.
Oh, that's so good.
Which, in my opinion, is the best Vita game, as much as I love Persona 4 Golden.
I think it's a pretty easy argument.
Tearaway is, Media Molecule, I think, was the only studio that took all of the weird things about the Vita that people tried to shoehorn, like back touch, people tried to shoehorn camera stuff, microphone stuff, and Media Molecule built a game around it where it didn't feel forced. Mm-hmm. It actually felt like a part of the game. And just the way that game breaks the fourth wall, just constantly in new and surprising ways, from all of a sudden you look up in the sun and that's you, or your finger is going through the back of the screen in order to help Iota.
And even like little things, like there'll be a cool environmental thing and it's like, oh, like jump on that thing. And then you realize it's like the triangle button or like
In some ways, it's a very Nintendo school of game design.
Yeah,
They're just like, hey, let's look at all the neat features of this thing and just figure out what's fun for each of them. And that's what the game will be. I'm a Persona devotee to the core for the best game on the platform, but Tearaway I think is the most original.
Yeah,
and striking.
That's one of those games where it's like I'm super happy that Tearaway Unfolded is coming to PS4, which maybe we'll see more of at E3, because it's one of those games that is so incredible that not enough people got to play just because of the lack of Vitas out there.
It was like 21,000 units or something got
something
moved.
Like super
something
impressive.
Of just like it was below abysmal. It was just actually tragic,
which is a shame because it reviewed so well. Yeah. The reviews were like incredible. Yeah, like I love that game. I will be very I can't wait to play Unfolded because I'm curious to see if it can
how it translates.
If it can maintain that feeling, because honestly, for me, like the touch stuff was surprising and so just happy and pleasant and
sort of interesting. Like, it was that game that was great to play. It had this intimacy to it where like you wanted that world literally in your hands, because that's the whole thing.
I know.
That was what the game was about, and it was about like being close to it.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. There are certain games, I think one of the reasons that only certain genres work on PC really well, for example, is just having that monitor right there in front of your face makes such a difference. I think Tearaway, that's a perfect example of the same kind of thing.
Well, it was that sort of like tangibility to everything of the believing that this entire world could be constructed.
Like the
ripples in the water. There are so many details walking around that world where I'm like, oh, that is so cute and clever. Mm-hmm. And it gets hard. Like some of the platforming elements later are legitimately challenging. And the very end, like towards the end, like no spoilers, as much as you can spoil it. But it's just like the worlds become really varied and interesting. Mm-hmm. And the puzzle solving is interesting. The mechanics, what I like about that game is you're constantly getting a new mechanic, almost in that like Metroidvania style of I feel like I am expanding my tool set.
Yeah.
And as soon as you master one, you become a novice at the next.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that game. I've wanted to replay it for a while, and I'm waiting for Unfolded because I want to see how it works on PS4.
Yeah, I'm super curious to see if it's able to sort of maintain that same level of magic. And for as great as, or as much as I sort of appreciate what Little Big Planet did, I appreciated it more than I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Tearaway, I'm just like, man, these guys
totally.
Are some
yes.
of
the yeah. I totally
Tearaway is just a masterpiece. Like that game is just so, so, so good and smart.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
It's like Jared Petty of video game.
Oh, Goldfarb, you are so sweet. Oh my gosh.
This is weird.
My ego is being stoked. Thank you.
I hate you, Marty.
You guys are weird. Why do you.
I'm trying to balance.
For balance, the yin and the yang. Love and the hate.
I'll never ask you inside baseball again, Goldfarb.
Well, thanks, man.
You'll always have inside baseball.
Always.
I know what that means. We did it. That was episode 397.
Do we have anything else to talk about?
Maybe
a little thing coming down the pipeline?
A little thing coming up June 27th.
Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun.
I think we're all going to be there. Podcast Beyond episode 400 live in San Francisco, California.
Yay.
Tandem event with Podcast Unlocked 200. They're separate podcasts. Don't worry. Some people were worried that it was going to be like a giant 8-person cast of just screaming. Yeah.
No, it's actually going to.
It's Unlocked and then a big gap and then Beyond.
Yeah.
Are we going to have a rumble?
It's actually going to end like Anchorman.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Do I have to kill myself?
No, we're going to beat each other up with consoles.
I have to cut my own head off.
I'm going to smash a PS4 over Ryan McCaffrey's head. You heard it here first, Xbox boy.
There we are.
You're going down.
I'm going to go get one of those big wooden things that looks like a bishop that he's like, holding.
Yeah, I'm kidding. There will be no fanboy wars there, just slightly.
But yeah, it's going to be a big event. We're going to have a ton of IGN past, present, and future there.
I was at Podcast Beyond 200 as a fan and then joined the company. Mm-hmm. Miranda was at 300 as a fan. So maybe you will be at 400.
That's right. We hire specifically from every 100th podcast episode.
From that pool. We talked about possibly revealing the news ghost.
That's right.
That was a weird idea we had. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I looked at you.
Do we know who he is?
He was in Italy. Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. There's going to be
just a dude with a sheet. Exactly. Get weird.
Meet and greet podcasts, really cool original stuff.
Hugs and kisses.
Hugs, kisses,
drugs. Really,
it's gonna be no,
no
awesome.
Drugs.
We are finalizing our Eventbrite for the event. We're going to have it up shortly. I mean, very shortly. I think Brian and I literally just missed a meeting about that. That's fine. Who cares? Yeah, follow us on Twitter. We're going to we'll let you guys know as soon as it's up, as soon as all those details are up. I am at McBiggity. Brian, you are at Agent Bizzle.
That's right.
Andrew, you are at Garfep. And Jared, you are at Petty, Jared.
Indeed, I am.
One and word. The comma's all spelled out.
Also, can I shill before we get off?
Shill away. Shill away.
IGN Wiki is looking for Marvel Cinematic Universe
MCU
input. Win an Avengers number 2 from 1963.
Is that a comic book?
Yeah, it's a comic book.
How much is that worth?
Second issue of Avengers, about $4.25 for the
$4.25 for
$425.
We're giving that away.
We're giving that away.
Can I help out the wiki?
The best contributor, go to Marvel Cinematic Universe wiki. You are not eligible.
Can I just break a bunch of embargoes and put it in the wiki?
See me after. The first prize is Avengers number 2 from 1963.
Holy, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's in VGDF condition. It's very
couldn't
nice
get number one, huh, Jared?
No, we couldn't.
It's a fantastic prize.
That's the answer to that. So, and some other prizes too. But if you're into comic books, if you're into Agent Carter, or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or any of the movies, go on down there and please take a look around.
Yeah, read all the news on IGN. That's what Andrew's working on. Brian's got a bunch of cool original videos. Well, you're getting back in the fold, but I'm sure you're going to have a bunch of cool stuff leading up to E3.
I'm busy.
You're a busy bones.
So it's good.
We'll do a video. Can I do a video with you?
Yeah, what do you want to do?
Don't do that.
I don't know. Let's talk about it.
How about I punch you?
Absolutely.
On video.
I'm not going to do that.
It's on video.
I'll hug you.
Brian is also on NVC, the Nintendo podcast.
That's right.
Listen to that. I am on Unlocked, the Xbox podcast. Listen to that. Download or buy IGN Prime.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
It's good. You get some free games, but you also get rid of ads. And it helps keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And it helps keep us podcasting and everything, so that's fun. Yeah.
Please, keep us employed. Yeah. We like it.
Do all that. Just be nice to each other. Thank you for being lovely. Sign up to the
Podcast Beyond Facebook group.
Podcast Beyond Facebook group. That's that place is amazing. Everyone has nice conversations. No one's ever mean. No one calls me homeless.
Be excellent to one another. Yeah, party on, dudes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Be good. Yeah.
Brian has an album you can download for free.
That's right. It's called Misanthrope. Yeah. Go to misanthropealbum.com, download it for free, or pay what you want if you like it.
Andrew was in Gilmore Girls for a little bit.
That's right.
I was in Gossip Girl.
I'm trying to buy a Dr. Robotnik costume for Jared Petty.
I'm in. If you buy it,
we've been working on this for a while.
It.
Someday we'll get there.
This is not a real. And on that note,
I want you to be ordering giant traps to fill with animals. You're on the phone. I need a garbage can that can fit about 75 squirrels.
I am totally up for this.
Oh, I love you, Jared.
Dr. Robotnik, Baymax for Halloween.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really good.
And on that note, beyond.
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 Beyond. Beyond.
You guys are f***ing weirdos.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.